Good morning. I'm delighted to be here. I'm Susan Wolfe Fordham, and I'm going to take you on a whirlwind tour of a project we developed that involves an inclusive, collaborative local emergency planning meeting. But before I take you on that tour, I have to tell you that I and my co-author, Nancy Shea, have no relationships to disclose. Our emergency preparedness initiative focuses on three constituent areas: the disability community, and this is really about civil rights, about equal access and equity in emergency services. On the response side, this is about efficiency in emergency response. And on the community side, this is about public health and community resilience. Little bit of background. So we know on the one hand, there is a history of negative impacts to people with disabilities due to emergencies and disasters. We also know that there have been some Americans with Disabilities Act violations, gaps or omissions in local emergency plans, and some individual instances of discrimination. On the other hand, we have legal enforcement mechanisms. There have been some class action lawsuits, and the Department of Justice has an investigation mechanism called Project Civic Access, and that's a robust mechanism active in many states. We also have some FEMA planning guidance, the whole community guidance, and the disability community philosophy of nothing about us without us. And yet, problems still remain. So in 2011, we began thinking about how to close some of these gaps and bring together the response community, defined broadly, and the disability community. And we developed a curriculum and a community stakeholder meeting, or CSM, process, and we did it with strong input from people with disabilities, representative organizations, and with local responders. We held a training in 29 states and then a CSM in 21 localities. All told, we had 854 participants. The heart of our process is a workbook to guide the community through this collaborative process of looking at the local plan and looking at response practice and identifying and closing any gaps that there might be. And our workbook has a simple three-step process using three tools. It's intended to, and it does spark discussion and problem solving, and also information generated at the meeting is recorded in the workbook. The three tools and three steps are where are we now, which is basically a needs assessment and gap analysis tool, where do we want to be, which is about setting priorities, and how do we get there, which is about developing an action plan. So what happens in step one is the facilitator, whom we've trained, speaks to the entire group, again, people with disabilities and responders, public health, public safety, responders, managers, planners, and local government officials, and goes step by step through a comprehensive topical checklist, and the group discusses whether the community meets that particular standard. And here's a really tiny example from one of the checklists. So the facilitator would stand up and, for example, ask, in our plan or in our response practice, have we addressed privacy issues and a need for quiet space? And then the group discusses it. And often there is disagreement among members of the group. That disagreement is great because it leads to more discussion. Setting priorities is very simple. The group counts up the check marks, and where there are blank spaces, that indicates areas of greatest need. The group also talks about some quick solutions and inexpensive solutions because success can build success, so they may decide that they want to start there. And by the way, every community stakeholder meeting is different, and everyone has different priorities. And then we have an action plan template that the group fills in together. So by the end of the meeting, you have assessed the gaps and listed them, you've developed strategies, and you have an action plan moving forward. We've been gratified by our results, and there was a high level of satisfaction and usefulness reported by both responders and disability community members. 95% of our disability community member attendees reported increased motivation to prepare, and 69% reported learning something new about the local plan. Again, the assessment of our workbook, and by the way, I have a hard copy of the workbook, so if people want to see it after the presentation, they're welcome to. But again, assessment was positive, and both groups felt that the workbook was useful. 100% of our localities identified at least 5 gaps, and 100% identified generally low-cost gap-closing strategies during the meeting itself. After we left and the project ended, 8 communities reported continuing work on their own, which we think is great. Most common gap identified related to communication. Other gaps include a need for a better understanding of the disability community and its emergency needs, and finding the resources and services for functional and access need populations during emergencies. This slide is an example of some gap closing strategies. So in one town, they decided to include assisted living centers in the local plan. They had never been included before, and they started inviting heads of assisted living centers to planning meetings. Another community decided to work with disability provider organizations to disseminate information and educational materials to their constituents. Many towns decided to revise shelter service animal policy so that it would be in compliance with the ADA. And another community decided to make outreach to personal care assistant organizations and to the disability community to talk about welcoming PCAs into the shelters. There was a lot of sharing of local expertise and resources at these meetings. In fact, at 100% of the meetings, this happened. So just to give a few examples, one meeting was held in a kind of high-tech company area in Boston, and the community identified some technology needs related to emergencies. It turned out that a computer company had gone to the town and asked a way that they could help contribute to the community, and the town had said, gosh, we don't know. After the CSM, the town went back to the computer company and said, now we can tell you something specific we need help with. There was a lot of sharing of equipment, offers to share equipment. So in one community, a local special ed class offered to share a Hoyer lift. In another community, the Council on Aging offered to store wheelchairs that they had until an emergency and then offered to bring them to the shelter. And in another place, there was a plan to approach the public library about borrowing a CCTV video magnifier. Finally, a hospital was invited to the CSM in another city, and they offered to drive over their ASL interpreters if they would be needed at a shelter. And this happened in some way at every single meeting. So 2013 to 2014, we were evolving. The project funding ended, but we kept getting requests for CSM meetings, and we began working with regional public health coalitions to hold CSNs that were even more tailored to the community. Again, 100% of the communities found at least five gaps and found the solutions. So our team began thinking about how can we get this out to a broader audience? How can we use a train-the-trainer model? And we fast forward to today, we've developed an online course to teach this process. We're piloting it right now, and our first audience are emergency planners because we see them as local government change agents. The hope for the future is broadening this to our usual very, very broad audience. Again, we had stakeholder review and input. And because it's kind of boring, frankly, to teach a process, we have made this online course an interactive role play simulation with an ongoing storyline. We're also querying our learners about attitudes and perceived obstacles to CSMs because that will help our future research. We're using the Moodle learning management system because that is accessible. We had a small pre-pilot. We're now retooling based on those results. And by the end of December, we will have had a second pre-pilot and then implemented our pilot with 200 learners. Limitations. Well, we only have data from Massachusetts. And while we in Massachusetts believe that as Massachusetts goes, so goes the nation, it is perhaps not scientifically accurate. And it's also a limitation to have an online course because, again, thinking of our future really broad audience, there will be some people who do not have access to the internet or have the relevant computer skills. Future plans include development of some tool to be like a scorecard about community stakeholder meetings and assess quality. And also, we want to follow the process from community stakeholder meeting to the actual plan modification and implementation. And so we plan that for future research, and we want to develop tools along with it. In addition to my colleague Nancy Shea, I'd like to acknowledge colleagues at UMass Medical School and also at UMass Amherst who've worked on these projects, and our consultants I want to acknowledge as well. Our funding has come from UMass Medical School, Commonwealth Medicine Division, and from our state's Department of Public Safety with FEMA funding. So I'll conclude now, and I'm happy to show people the workbook when I'm done, when we're all done. Thank you.